All right, so today in the Exit Your Way Business Roundtable, we're going to be talking a little bit more about adapting and retraining your workforce for a new world. Ben Baker is going to share some thoughts on onboarding and re-onboarding employees and how we're going to work through that. And then we're going to allow plenty of time for people in the audience to raise your hand. We'll bring you up on stage. You can add your information, ask your questions, whatever we want to do there, and then get your input. Because as you all know, if you've been in this before, this is an opportunity for people to add to the discussion. This is not a one-way presentation. It's an interactive presentation, and we want to make sure that happens all the way through. On the stage with me, we got Ben Baker, who's going to be speaking here shortly. We got Andrew Cross from Exit Your Way. He's monitoring the chat, making sure that I keep on track and helps us there. And Johnny's going to be watching the people. Johnny Kingman from Exit Your Way is going to be watching the people, raising their hands. He's going to make sure they get on stage and all that good stuff and running the chat. So we do that. I'm going to get the chat pulled up so I can see what's happening. It's great to see all of you out here. I'm really, really, really grateful for everyone. It's so awesome to be able to come into this thing and mingle a little bit before, talk after. I see some of the great relationships that I'm able to just develop in this, and B, other people, I see them at the tables talking, and that is just really cool. I'm so glad to be able to facilitate this. Again, as we know, we started this thing out a while ago, and we were talking about just survivability. And I think as we've evolved from, are we going to be able to survive? And it's still a question, honestly, for a lot of businesses, if they will be able to survive. We've really transitioned now into some places are actually starting to think about or are returning to work, not to work, but as last week we heard Bonnie Barcelos and Amelia Mendenhall talking about the specific things that we need to consider when we're going back to the workplace. It's not a return to work, it's a return to the workplace because people are still working from home. A lot of them are remote working and will continue to do so. So as we move through this process, and now we see that we are returning people to the workplace, I think we're going to see a fair amount of people that may never return to the workplace. When you look at some of the stuff that's come out in the last few days with Twitter saying that they're going to allow people that want to work from home indefinitely to do that. And there's some companies obviously can't do that, but that's one of the real things that we're going to be dealing with is the fact that we have people that will want to stay home now and work from there. We've proven that in some situations there are its benefits to that, both for the company and the employee. And then how do you integrate that with your business? How do you integrate it from a collaborative sense, as we heard Bonnie talking about last week from Magnus and Clemencic in Seattle, an engineering firm? They want their people to return to work for the collaboration and the mentoring that their younger associates need as they go through. This is, man, when you just think about it, it can be pretty daunting. And I think overall, in talking with the businesses that we do, it's one of those things where you have to cover the basics, as we talked about last week, get those down, and then get your employees, your customers, and everyone that's associated with your business up to speed as quickly as possible with the way that you're going to operate your business. And that's really, I think, the only thing you can do, because nobody knows it all in this sense, in this time. I mean, you just look at yesterday, and I'm going to share this briefly, and we're going to go over to Ben. I was Washington State is now going to go into phase two. I don't even know the exact date when they're going to do it. I think it's the end of this month or something. But they just released the stuff that restaurants are going to have to do. Restaurants. Now, I'm not talking anything else. I'm just talking restaurants. Restaurants have to track every single employee. They have to get their name, phone number, email, time in, time out that are coming in to dine. You can only have one person that's close to the table or that sit, the one person serving the table. They have to be wearing a mask. All of the people in the restaurant that are going to the restaurant are supposed to be wearing masks, and everyone's supposed to be social distancing. So, I mean, I'm not even going to go into how many impossibilities that pulls up or creative solutions are going to need to happen to make just that one little thing happen. And, you know, in my conversations this week, I talked to a business that they're talking about additional equipment. Because what used to be something in construction that was a heavy lift where you're going to have 3, 4, or 5 people helping lift something, they're too close now. What are you going to do in that situation? And then you think about one that we're probably all familiar with is the meatpacking industry. When I was young and still in school, I actually did projects in a meatpacking plant. I mean, they literally are bumping hips in a lot of situations in those plants. How are they going to do what they need to do to keep people safe? And there's just so many of these challenges that we're going to have to do. That brings us to the next topic that we're talking about today is how the heck do you get all these changes in the way that you do everything from we talked about last week to, you know, bathroom procedures to customer procedures to how do I handle sick when I don't feel well? How is somebody in my family doesn't feel well? How are we going to do when we need to lift something, work together? What, just so many things. And that's why we thought it was appropriate to have Ben talk today a bit more about re-onboarding and what that really means as we move forward in essentially a drastically changing workplace. So, Ben, I want to let you take the stage here, man, and give us a bit more knowledge on that. And like I said before, if you have questions, want to put some input, raise your hand. We'll get you on stage here in a few minutes and we can start running through that as we do. And I think that adds a great flair to what we do. So did I miss anything, Andrew? You keep me on track. Good.
I'm good. Yeah. Just for folks, if you want to participate or jump into the discussion, have a question, just hit the Q&A and we'll pull you up. We'd love to hear from you. That's the goal. So,
Johnny, we got everything from your end.
Yeah. People are using the chat. The Q&A is a great spot for just those one-off questions. That way, they don't really the questions don't get buried. They just remain up, so we can circle back with those at the end.
Good. All right. Well, Ben, without further ado, let's listen to what you have to say. I'm sure we're going to hear some good stuff.
Oh, there you go. And, you know, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. It's I love coming to this thing week after week. You know, last week there was some great conversations. I'm sure next week's going to be some great conversations. So I'm getting a lot out of this week in and week out. The first thing we need to realize is that we're going to make mistakes. We made mistakes sending people home. We're going to make mistakes bringing people back. The trick is how we pivot once we've made those mistakes. What are we going to learn from them? How are we going to adapt? How are we going to change things? And how are we going to communicate that change through the entire process? Because the trick for this whole thing with bringing people back to the office and adjusting to the new normal is going to be communication. Communication is critical. We need to think about the fact that, okay, 12, 16 weeks ago, the world was completely different. Everybody was in their cubicles. Everybody was doing their day-to-day routine. Everybody had a way that they interacted with everybody, and it's changed. We forced people home. You know, you took millions of people across North America, hundreds of millions of people, billions of people across the world, and you just sent them home with no roadmap, you know, a wing and a prayer and hoping that it was going to work properly. And, you know, in a lot of respects, this has worked really well. In a lot of respects, it hasn't. You know, you have a lot of people sitting in 650 square feet where there's 2 people, 3 people, 4 people in a house, and it's absolutely not conducive to working. You know, and there's been a lot of stress. I mean, as the joke is going to be, there's going to be a lot of divorces and there's going to be a lot of babies made, you know, in the next 9 months.
Yeah.
That's reality. You know, and that's going to reflect back to business. You know, there's a lot of extra stress. There's been a lot of changes, and some of those changes have been communicated well, and a lot of those changes have not been communicated well, because like it or not, when we're that diversified, we've siloed ourselves. We're now not talking as easily to everybody within the company. We're talking to our teams, and we tend to sit there and say, okay, I need to do these tasks on a daily basis. I'm going to get these tasks done because it's out of sight, out of mind. You're not having those conversations over coffee. You're not having those conversations in the lunchroom. You're not walking down to the show floor. You're not, you know, talking to people outside your department. You know, I was just talking to somebody who says you're not having, you know, creative sessions with different, you know, different departments as much because it's been heads down. You know, people have just been heads down. We got to get to work. It's been crisis mode. We need to go from crisis mode, from sprint mode to marathon mode. And when we take ourselves out of that sprint mentality and put ourselves back into the marathon mentality, we're going to do much better as individuals, as companies, as organizations, as a country, because anybody can run 50 yards. Anybody can run 100 yards. You may not run fast. It may not be pretty. You know, your technique may not be that great. But if you have to, you can move yourself 100 yards down the track. Now, a marathon is a completely different thing. It takes a different muscle set of groups. It takes a different mentality. It takes a different thought process. And by thinking like a marathon, we need to think as what do we need to do to make sure that everybody's successful long term? What is the goal that we're all moving towards? What is the next set of goals for the company? What is the next set of goals for this team? What is the next set of goals for this individual? And how are we going to communicate this effectively? Because the SOPs, the standard operating procedures, the policies, the culture, just the little nuances that make a company what it is have had to change. Because innovation has been necessary and pivot has been necessary and change has been necessary. And we need to now codify what those changes have been, because a lot of these things have happened on the fly. A lot of these things have not been written down. A lot of these things have not been, you know, understood why they're being done. We just have to get something done. So we do it. And, you know, that's been great for that sprint mentality because it's kept us alive as corporations. But we need to get beyond that alive survival mindset. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and they were talking about, okay, people that survive COVID-19, and we need to get beyond survival. Survival means you just made it, you know, you're keeping your head above water. We need to get to the point where we're beyond surviving and we're thinking about what's next. What's the next set of goals? You know, we need to get out of that mentality of this has happened to us. You know, oh my God, to, okay, this has happened to us. What have we learned from this? How are we better because of this? What new skills have we come up with? And how are we going to be better as an organization because of it? And that needs to be communicated. And that's what leadership is all about. We need to have more leaders in the company, from the CEO all the way down to people that are now called managers, who I call, you know, team leaders. Because everybody in the company has to think about, how are we going to make our team better moving forward? How are we going to give them the tools they need to be successful moving forward? And what's the story we need to tell everybody that they can internalize, they can codify, and they can retell, that tells not only about where we were in 2019, what happened to us in 2020, what we learned from it, how we're better because of it, and this is where we're going. Because if we can get that story into people's heads, they're gonna align, and people are gonna motivate, and they're gonna want to move forward with you, because they understand the direction, they understand how they're part of the overall success, they understand the work that they did during this crisis actually mattered, and the sacrifices that they did during these 2, 3, 4, 6 months, whatever it's gonna be, mattered, and that they helped keep the company alive and survive, and they're going to be part of that company moving forward because of the work that they've done and the groundwork that they built to build the new normal of the company. You know, we need to get there. We need to re-onboard every single employee, because where we were 6 months ago is not where we are today. We have dramatic change. You know, some of the changes are small. They're nuances. You know, we move right instead of we move left. You know, our customers have, you know, are buying this, more of this from us now instead of this from us now. But you could have brand new customers. You could have a brand new product line. You could have brand new procedures. You could have, you know, how we work from home. You know, what is, you know, what is the long-term expectations? If people are going to be working from home, this is what we need from you as an employee for you to work from home successfully. And we need to understand, what does that employee need from us as a corporation for them to be successful and feel that they're still part of the team, even though they're not within our location. Mm-hmm. We need to be thinking about all these things, and we need to be codifying it, and we need to be explaining it, because people want to know the why. That, you know, it's not enough to give people, says, here's the new procedure. You know, here's the new procedure for doing this. The question is why. What happened? What changed? Why have we moved from doing this to doing this? Well, we did this because we have to do this. Okay, that's great. But that was, we developed that procedure during the crisis mode. Does that still make sense? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, okay, where do we go from here? And the more input we can have from the people within the organization to sit there and say, this is working, this isn't working, this is great, this is bad. You know, our customers are needing this from us. Our vendors are needing this from us. You know, this is the psychological change that has happened within this organization. Here's the cultural changes that have happened within the organization. And if everybody understands those things, you can start marching together forward in one direction. If everybody doesn't get that, if everybody isn't on the same page, if everybody doesn't have that same story to tell, then there's going to be disconnect, and you're going to keep that silo mentality. And I was telling somebody the other day, silos probably cost a company $1 million a year in ineffectiveness. Yeah. Because, you know, silo A has no idea what silo B is doing, and they certainly don't know what silo C is doing. And if it goes back to the point where everybody is worried about their own little fiefdom, and they're not focused on the company objectives as a whole, they're not worried about the customer and the experience that they're providing the customer, then they're going to be ineffective. And all they're going to do is they're going to worry about their own little part of it, and that's where the disconnect and companies are going to break down. We need to be looking, focusing on the customer. We need to be focusing on purpose, and the profit will come out of that. But if all we're focused on is the profit, the company's not going to survive. So these are some initial thoughts that I have. I mean, I'm sure there's a million questions that people have, but I wanted to take that as an initial thought and then grab people's questions from there.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things that I've been writing down while you're talking here, and I'm sure we're going to have others that talk about this, but the alignment, I think, is one of the things that your onboarding or your re-onboarding really needs to do. Mm-hmm. That, because you think about it and you go, okay, why have we done what we do? What the why behind what we're doing really engages your people top to bottom.
Absolutely.
The other thing that came through loud and clear to me was, nobody knows everything. And this is a time when leadership needs to be admitting that first and foremost.
Yep.
We don't know everything, but we're going forward with the best information that we have. I mean, we heard that last week with Bonnie and Amelia, that, you know, nobody knows it all. You just have to get the information you can and try to go forward the best you can. So,
and you have to admit those mistakes too. Yeah. Say, hey, listen, we made a mistake, but this is what we learned from it. How do we move forward together? How do we go? How do we pivot from this point?
Yeah. So basically what you're saying now is that we really need to be, every single person in the company needs to go through some sort of retraining as we are returning to the workplace, but not only returning to the workplace, transitioning into the long term, because you made another good point, I think, where you talked about we were in crisis mode. Mm-hmm. Now we're moving into more of a midterm mode, and then we're going to be into a long-term mode after we figure more things out. And I think that's one of the things that leaders are going to need to do at this point is saying, you know, and lay out these transitionary steps that they're going to have to go through, learning, figuring it out, you know, as they talk into the next 6 months to whatever it takes us to come back to some semblance of normalcy.
Yeah. And this is going to change your brand too. This is going to, you know, this is going to also affect how you're bringing this out internally is also going to affect how you communicate externally as well. You know, to be able to sit there and say, this is how our brand has changed and this is why we're going to serve you better as a vendor because of what we've learned through this crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how you're going to build more loyal, more value-based clientele by admitting that, you know what, we didn't know everything. We tried things. Some worked, some didn't work, but this is what we learned from it. And as an organization, this is what we're committed to moving forward. It's being able to, you know, show that vision.
Yeah.
And leadership is about admitting that you don't know everything, gathering information, assessing it, determining a way forward, moving forward. And then as things change again, reassessing it and rinse, repeat.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one word that comes to mind to me is humility. I mean, nobody, mm-hmm. hell, nobody knows really, you know, what... We don't. This is throw it up.
But we don't. We don't.
We're going to drive it the way we think is the best now, and then tomorrow it's going to change. That's mm-hmm. the only thing you know. It's going to change. I mean, when you look at the acceleration of transformation of business with video and other things that have happened in the last 2 months, it's probably. I was talking to somebody earlier. It's probably decades of change or a decade of change that got compressed into you know weeks. Because of this thing, and that's the leadership is going to have that challenge to navigate going forward. No doubt about that.
Well, just look at Zoom. I mean, look at where Zoom was 16 weeks ago as a company versus where they are today. Look at the technology. The technology has completely changed. It's now end-to-end 256 bit encryption. You know, they put in a whole bunch of different security measures. What they've done is they actually realized, you know what? We screwed up when we built this thing because we didn't realize, you know, what it was going to need. And when it was tested, they stood up and they said, okay, we made mistakes. Here's how we're fixing it. Is it perfect? No. But you know what? It's a heck of a lot better than it was 16 weeks ago. And that's only because they were put into a crisis situation where their feet were put to the fire.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some good stuff going on in the chat now, too. I see Dr. Aaliyah brings up humility allows us to receive feedback. And, yeah, and that's really, I think, what the leaders need to understand. And then Khan put in, you know, effective leaders are open to input from their people closest to the work. That's I think, across the board that business leaders are going to have to look at that just because, you know, change the procedure like this, but it's just not going to work because of this and that. And I think that's pretty telling. So Johnny, do we have anybody that's got their hand up? Let's get them up on the stage. Get some.
We got a good question here from Jason about HIPAA compliance.
Oh yeah. Let's bring Jason up. Let him talk about it. Let's give this a try, man. I'm jacked about this.
Let me see here.
Due to technical difficulties.
Yeah. You're with us. We're figuring it out. You got the amateurs running the show this year.
The monkeys are running the circuits, are they?
I think you go to the participants and then click on the little green guy and he'll come up. Right of it.
There you go.
Boom. Got it. Yay. He's here. Look at this. Technology.
Yeah. So we've had this situation now a couple of times with our company because we're in construction. So we're on construction sites and, you know, the reporting procedures and stuff for COVID are pretty strict, as you might imagine, for a construction site. So one of the questions that's come up a lot and that we've had to sort of talk to our employees about is that, you know, you're supposed to maintain people's privacy and you can't basically say who got sick But at the same time, if, you know, Sally doesn't show up for work for 2 weeks, everybody knows that Sally's the one that got sick. And so everybody kind of talks about that. So I'm just curious how to navigate that, you know, from a compliance issue.
I mean, I'm certainly no HIPAA aficionado, and I'll say that right off the bat, but you're never going to be able to stop the rumor mill ever. I mean, especially with something like this, when an employee's gone for 2 weeks, there's a pretty good idea that either, you know, they broke their arm on the job site or they got sick in one way, shape or form. And people are going to talk about it. You know, I think that the conversation needs to be that, you know, people are gone because people are gone, you know, and you know, they're just, you know, for one reason or other, they're not feeling well. And, you know, we've had to furlough them for one reason or another. And it's just, it's not avoiding the situation, but it's not giving any detail either. Because the problem is rumors kill, rumor mills kill. And all of a sudden, if everybody panics and sit there and says, oh my God, you know, where's Sally been? She's been gone for 2 weeks. And everybody goes, you know, am I going to be next? What's the next panic? It's being able to alleviate that in such a way that, you know, you don't have the panic and the rumor mill going together, but without mentioning somebody in particular.
And then, you know, Randy up here, he's done HIPAA consulting and can maybe speak.
So please, you know, step in, Randy, because you probably know a lot more about this than I do.
Unfortunately. You know, actually, you're spot on, Ben. The key thing, Jason, is unless you're going to run around your construction site and gag all of your people, they're going to speak. And sometimes, you know, I mean, you teach them correct principles, right? You teach them, okay, be careful, do it. You know, be cognizant of the fact that, you know, you might be aware that somebody so-and-so is sick or somebody is in here. They may have such and such a condition, but don't talk about that unless it's a life-threatening situation where you have to talk about it, right? You know, from a HIPAA security and privacy perspective, you do everything you can to keep it private. But if there's an emergency situation and you need to communicate something, you do it. You don't put somebody's life on the line just because, oh, I might not be in compliance with that. You know, they have exceptions for all that. So just, you know, talk to your people and say, hey, you know, be cognizant of what you're saying. And if somebody incidentally hears, you know, Joe Schmuckatelli is sick, they fell in, or is hurt, they fell and broke their leg, their ankle or whatever, there's going to be incidental hearing, you know, that happen. I mean, you go into hospitals. I used to go and do risk analysis and risk assessments at hospitals, at clinics. I walk in and, you know, the security officer takes me down a hall and I overheard stuff all the time. I mean, it's not like they give you a pair of earplugs.
Yeah.
And you go into silent mode. So just be careful and have them, you know, teach them what they, you know, to be cognizant of those things, and then they'll be okay. If they're blatantly going around and saying, hey, you know, so-and-so is here, and like they're posting it on social media and stuff like that, could be a big problem. Just like when, for example, when Ben Roethlisberger was in the hospital and somebody, you know, nobody was supposed to know and somebody posted it and they got sued.
Yeah. So,
I mean, the big thing is, go ahead.
You know, it kind of trips over, you know, overlaps into the privacy issues too. It's, you know, again, you know, back to what we were saying, that nobody knows what's going on right now too, because they're really testing these things. You know, I mean, are we tracking people to find out if they've got it? Do we need to, you know, liability wise, the waivers are being done for people. You know, you can't sue companies now for making employees come back to work, you know, because otherwise you know, you're just going to not do it. I wonder if that, you know, Randy too, kind of rolls into the HIPAA area.
Well, let me just say something right now. HIPAA and privacy and security are being killed right now. Yeah. I mean, you think about it. You've got all these.
They're being broken.
They're being broken. Probably 5,000 times per second or 10,000 times per second. Every word I speak out of my mouth, it's being broken. And here's why I say that. You got all these doctors that are doing telemedicine right now to people at home. How many of those people at home have a secure system? I mean, they're calling them on the phone. They're Skyping with them. They're Zooming with them. You know, none of those things are going to meet HIPAA privacy and security requirements in any way, shape, or form for the most part, unless they already had something set up. You don't have anybody. You know, you're not going to see the government sending people out to try to enforce that either. No. It's not going to happen.
I mean, internally, what we've tried to do and what I've instructed our team is like, look, you know, now is not the time to, you know, basically act in paranoia. Now is the time to act with empathy. If somebody gets sick, that's not something that they can help. You know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but we don't know. And we can't sit back here and judge and, you know, try and, you know, assess their intentions. What the important thing is empathy, right? You know, if they're sick, they can't help it if they get sick. So let's be a company that cares for each other. Let's be a company that asks, how are you doing? Hope you're feeling better. Is there anything that we can do? That's what we've tried to say.
And I honestly think that that's a good way of doing it is that we need to look at the why behind the what, you know, and I think that, you know, I think there's going to be a rewriting of a lot of stuff of the HIPAA and privacy and all that that are going to come out in over the next 5 or 10 years. I mean, there's because of COVID-19. I mean, up in Canada, you know, it's interesting. Telemedicine is being done through a secure channel run by the government. Yeah, you log into a 256 bit encrypted chat line, and that's the only way that you can get telemedicine done in Canada. But
they don't have that here.
Yeah.
Not so, that long shot.
Difference in mentality, but it's, you know, I think that open and honest communication with our staff of just saying, look, guys, these are the rules, and this is the why behind the rules, and this is how we as a company have decided that we're going to enforce this. And it's not a carrot and stick. It's just, you know, this is how we're interpreting the guidelines, and this is how we're going to act accordingly, and how we're going to take care of our people. And I like that attitude, is this is how we're going to take care of our people through this. Because you're right. People get sick. If somebody, you know, gets a cold, or they get corona, or they get, you know, AIDS, or they get cancer, whatever, you know, it's not their fault.
It's not a disclosure, you know, of the, you know, the fact that they're sick. That's the pain behind it for the person. It's how the reaction is to it.
It all goes back to something you were saying before, Ben. Is the communication. You're taking care of your internal customers. You're taking care of your employees, of your colleagues. You take good care of them. You make sure there's good, proper communication. They understand the why behind what you're doing as an organization and what their role is in that why. Have that defined, and how they can help you to meet your why. And when you do that, you know, they're going to turn around, and they're going to take care of your customers. You take care of your internal customers. They're going to take care of your external customers, and your company's going to be okay. And it's going to thrive. That's the thing. It's going to thrive because when people were going to know you, like you, and trust you both internally and externally.
Yeah. So we brought Dr. Aaliyah onto the stage here. So he had something to say on it. So let's hear your thoughts.
A couple of things. First of all, Ben, you know, explaining the why behind the decision making, and you're right, it's not the carrot and the stick, but you want to ask your employees for buy-in or plead with them. It's like, we're all in this together. If I'm your leader, I need your help. We have to do this together because we're only as strong if we're united. If one or two of you object and are going to sabotage this, either actively or passively behind the scenes, then we're all going to fall on our face. We need to be united.
United in purpose.
Absolutely agree with that.
And the second thing has to do with Jason. When you talked about, you're totally right, Jason, about empathy. Here's what's unfortunate about human nature. When we're under tremendous stress, empathy goes out the window because we're in survival mode. And you're right. We all need to be empathetic and be kind and loving to one another. But when you're, Ben, you called it a marathon. I'm going to step up a little bit more and say this is an ultra marathon that is going to last for months and months and months into 2021.
Or longer.
Or longer.
Exactly. Or longer,
About an ultra marathon. Even regular marathoners that run, 26 miles are not going to make it. So that's why we need everybody else. And truly, for leadership, we need emotional intelligence. Like EQ will become even more important than anything else. Your IQ, it won't matter as much as your EQ. And that's what leaders have to focus on.
You know, I'm gonna add on to that, Ilya. I think that, emotional intelligence focuses mostly on emotions. And I think there needs to be even more than that. There needs to be needs intelligence, because you've got emotional needs, you've got physical needs, you've got mental needs, you've got spiritual needs. Leaders have to be aware of all of those areas of aspects of people's lives if they're really going to be able to get people to unite behind them and have the loyalty that they need to have in order to be able to effectively execute through this process.
I think if a leader is transparent and comes to his or her employees and says, I need your help, I can't do this without you. We're all together. Right now we're just in survival mode, but how do we go from survival to even thriving during this crisis? Nobody can do it by themselves. And to be vulnerable enough to say, I don't have all the answers, like you guys have been saying, most of us don't know what's happening. We're guessing, we're taking educated guesses of how things are going to be. But do we know for a fact that we put this thing to practice? Well, not yet.
A lot of it comes down to trust. A lot of it comes down to building trust within the company, so people are willing to open up and not get, not get somebody yelling at them and say, well, that was a stupid comment. People need to be able to, say, hey, listen, I've got an idea. And have the idea be judged on its merit, not on the person saying it.
Right. You're totally right.
Yeah, we brought a couple other people onto the stage. And well, Jason, thanks a lot for coming up. That was a great input there. And Randy as well. We're going to drop you guys off. We're going to let JD and am I saying it right? And Con is how do you say it?
Yes, Constantinos.
Okay.
Con is easier.
Constantinos. Okay. See, I can say that easier than I can Con.
All right. It's always fun when I say, trust me, my name is Con.
Yeah, there you go.
You need a t-shirt that says that. That'd be great.
Pro.
Yeah, so you had a couple good comments in there, and JD, you did as well. So I'm going to give you the two of you guys to go ahead and start off, JD, and then we'll move on to Con.
Yeah, great conversation, folks. And I think that we're kind of hearing this new vocabulary being thrown around, especially the selling of empathy. Mm-hmm. And empathy for a long time has been one of the great traits of leadership, if not the most desired quality of a leader today. But empaths alike, it's almost like they're trying to pee on each other and mark territory as who's more empathic. And I think that the proof is in the pudding. The proof is in the action. I came upon Fromm's quote on humanization the other day, and it really stuck with me, because I think that that's got to be the movement now, is one toward altruism and solidarity. And I think that's those are words that have been mentioned to a lesser extent in all of the press briefings. But we're finding our way through this recovery period. I'm not even sure we're in the recovery period yet. I still think that we're in the thick of it, man. I don't see recovery happening.
As we talked this morning, you are in the area.
Who the hell knows who's going to be, with us on the other side at this point? This could take, dare I say, years. And the reverb effect is going to be painful and may last the rest of the decade. So I think now is, the shifting of the mindset, how to lead in pandemic times. Nobody's an expert. I think the learning has to come from people who are answering a call of leadership in some way and are kind of stepping up and showing the world how it's done, and not just making the idle claim that they're empaths.
Great stuff. And it is such. You touched on it, and everybody touched. Most people touched on it too, but nobody knows what the hell to do right now. But we're going to use our best guess and what we think is the right direction. And like you said, with the empathy behind it, but there are people, as you said too, that are trying to say, "Oh, I'm more empathetic than you," and other, you know. But it, really, you have to find what connects with your people, your customers, the people around you.
Does anyone actually say that, Damon? That I'm more empathetic than you? Does anyone actually say that, those words? I find that hard to believe.
Yeah,
there's a song out of the '90s that says, "My God's bigger than your God."
There you go. But it is, as you said, JD, some people are using it that way. It is interesting. Another thing you touched on too, JD, I think is very interesting for me is, you know, I'm sitting here in Washington and we are kind of supposedly on the backside with cases going down. And when we talked this morning, you said you're right in the thick of it there in the Midwest.
We're stepping up, guys. We're about ready to overtake Queens. Cook County, Illinois, is the top as the top leader, as your board leader in case.
Yeah,
these are not good stats to be proud of.
Yeah, I know. It's like, yeah, we don't want to be the leader, but and so that is when, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday as I was preparing for it. Is I used to run a company that had East and West Coast operations, and the differences between those operations is stark. It's just in normal times, it's crazy. But when you add in something like this, what you do and the training that, going back to Ben, the training that I do on the West Coast or in one location is much different mm-hmm. than I have to do in others mm-hmm. because of the situation.
Yeah. And leaders need to be thinking about that, the regional differences within a company or country differences.
Yeah.
You know, think mm-hmm. of a country differences.
Yeah.
So Con, I'd love to hear what you had to say too.
Yeah. Con, what's
well, I kind of took a different touch on this. Everybody's talking about how we're going through this and everything else and what happens if people have to leave work, for example. I believe Jason was bringing that up earlier. My concern is that we haven't said enough now on this side of what happens when people come back after COVID. You have a situation right now where there's reports, for example, out of China that were a couple of months ahead of us with the wave and everything. People returning to work were treated like lepers. And you've got situations now where people were afraid to get close to them. So not only do you have to deal with the isolation when you're in the throes of the disease itself, but after that, you're isolated like somebody who's spoiled and tainted in some way that your coworkers don't want to even be around you at that point out of fear of what's going on. And how do we as leaders now impact that? How do we position that and almost presented in a different light, because there have been on the other extreme situations where we want to capitalize on people that have the antibodies that have mm-hmm. survived this effectively, that are not in immediate risk of contracting the disease again, nor passing it on to somebody else. And are they the ones that will be able to kind of, you know, have that fireproof suit on that are going to go into the throes of things and kind of, you know, be able to take the coals out of the fire from that piece?
Yeah.
And that's just another thought to put out there, because, again, as leaders, we hope to be two steps ahead as much as we can to kind of be asking those questions, even if we don't have the answers, about what might be happening down the road, about exploring those possibilities.
Exactly. And you're also going to be saying is, okay, are certain people going to come back to work Tuesdays and Thursdays and other people are going to come back to Mondays and Wednesdays? You know, what is that going to do for teams? What is that going to do for morale? What's that going to do for, you know, for effectiveness of communication and projects and all that kind of stuff? We need to be thinking about, as you said, you know, it's not just now. We need to be thinking 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years down the road. How do we reintegrate our people and be able to take a look and say, what's the new normal going to be? And how do we make sure everybody feels safe and everybody feels welcome and everybody feels part of the team moving forward? And every business is going to have to do this their own way. And it's going to be based on your culture. It's going to be based on the dynamics of your company. It's going to be based on your leadership.
Yeah.
Imagine the psychological, mental, and emotional impact on somebody who's already gone through this battle, the physical battle of overcoming COVID, and then they go back to work and they feel rejected. Imagine what that's going to be for them.
Yeah. Oh, horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. Like somebody years ago, you know, when people have HIV and people would learn about it, you know, where you could deal with something like that.
Yeah.
And still have that stigma of HIV in the office.
Oh, yeah.
There's still, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's going to be a real challenge there. And that's something, Con, that I hadn't thought about, but you're right. You know, yeah, it's like you're whatever, you know. It's Jennifer in the chat brings up a really good part about too, as working parents. We've got now this is something that, you know, some of us are fortunate enough, our kids are older or not, or don't have kids in some respects, but what are we going to do? You know, part of the workplace transformation is going to be, what if childcare is not going, schools aren't opening? How are we going to have to, you know, there's got to be a lot of flexibility we've got to deal with too in these organizations to accommodate that. It's going to
be. Yeah. And I think, I mean, not every business is going to be able to do it, but I think that the larger organizations need to step up and start thinking about having childcare is part of their, you know, part of their company. I mean, when I used to work for Kinko's, I managed the corporate for Western Canada. I used to fly down to head office all the time, and they had a 200 seat daycare, everything from, you know, from newborns all the way up to grade 6 or grade 7 or whatever they needed, you know, for the head office employees. Now, did they have that, you know, in the 850 or 900 stores across North America and around the world? Absolutely not. But at least they had that at the head office ability. So, you know, companies are going to have to start thinking, okay, it's not just our workers that we need to be thinking about. We need to be thinking of their families as well. Yeah. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi. Yeah. I mean, that's the big thing, is because my son's supposed to go to kindergarten, and now there's like confusion. Is he going to go, or is he going to go 2 days a week and be home the other 2 days a week? Is he going to go for 1 week, have another week off? Or is the daycare going to even open? Because my daughter goes to daycare. So it's just like, it's just created this logistical nightmare. Like, I know I'm fortunate in that I do work from home and I can work from home and I have that flexibility, but not, like you said, not every parent is going to have that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and then even if they do open, their social distancing, you know, kindergarteners trying to social distance, 1 year old trying to social distance, like it's,
I just, grade seven's trying to social distance is impossible.
I just don't see how, like, logistically how it's going to work. And so I think even more parents may be considering homeschooling. And then, you know, so that brings in another, it's just, I think it's going to affect in a ripple way a lot more than we think just on site. It's gonna have this compounded effect.
And does that mean that one parent is going to be out of the workforce for 4 or 5 years? Right. You know, is this, you know, I mean, in our particular situation, we decided to have my wife stay home for the first 4 or 5 years that our son was born, you know, for a lot of different reasons. And so she was out of the workforce. So that, you know, that you have those situations as well. And then you have the stigma of once the kids are back at school, you've been out of the workforce for 4 or 5 years, and all the challenges that proving that, you know, that you are worthy, quote unquote, you know, of those jobs because you've been away from work for 4 or 5 years, even though you've been working three times, you know, three times the amount of work, you know, as a mom doing all those type of things, or a dad doing those sort of things at home. Yeah. So there's a lot to consider, mm-hmm. you know, as we move forward about the dynamics of family, how family dynamics, you know, integrate with work, you know, and how businesses need to sit there and say, okay, how do we help our families that work for us be successful and enable us to be successful? And there's going to be a lot of conversations and a lot of trial and error that's going to come out of that.
Hey, Ben, on that point, may I jump in for a second?
Yes.
I mean, when you look at the landscape of organizations, corporations, especially ones that have a significant enough size and population of their workforce, I mean, there's an enormous change now in the landscape of HR consulting or HR professionals, and they're looking at how can they position their benefits very differently. Things that were important 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago from a benefit standpoint for employees is something very, very different now.
Yeah.
I mean, now, I mean, I've seen it in the comments in the chat. Mental health now, as an addition to physical health benefits, is huge now from that perspective. Mm-hmm. To Jennifer's point, if an organization can offer some sort of coverage for childcare, would that make a big difference in attracting top talent?
Huge. And keeping top talent.
Correct.
Yeah. Never mind attracting top talent. you as an employee, if you know that your kids are safe and they're being taken care of and they're happy where they are, and you can, you know, you can pick them up at 6 o'clock and you're not having to leave the office at 3:30 to rush through rush hour to be able to pick up your kid, you know, you're going to work a lot harder and you're going to be a lot more productive and you're going to be a lot happier at work, you know, because you know your kids are safe and taken care of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a great conversation, and
thank you. I
thank everyone for coming up onto the stage, and it's this interaction is really what I enjoy about it. We're going to drop the people that came up. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We got to wrap things up because we do need to get done at the top of the hour here. And Johnny, awesome job, dude. This is working out.
Good job, Johnny.
We funneled.
Yeah. We probably didn't even have enough bandwidth to get all the people up that wanted to speak. But I think everyone's getting the hang of it. I'd encourage everyone to like email feedback or questions, you know, and if Andrew and Damon and myself can't answer, I know that Christopher Nesbitt can lend a hand. But, you know, there's only the second week using this platform, but I'm seeing a lot of engagement, especially in the beginning at the tables.
Yeah.
You know, similar to a networking event where you kind of, you walk into the conference and you walk up to a table. Hey, what do you do? You know, it's pretty cool.
Wow. And I didn't even look at the Q&A, but next week I will do that. This is awesome. I will let Andrew take us out here, but Ben, thank you so much. Everyone else that got up and shared your awesome information and just so appreciative of this. But Ben, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. And I'm going to hang out for half an hour afterwards. So, you know, if anybody's got any questions or comments or, you know, tell me that I don't know what I'm talking about, you know, come and see me.
All right. All right. Good stuff. Well, Andrew, take us away.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, closing up again and right on time. Are we going to be going back, Damon, to the conference room?
Yeah, we're going to be back after? In the conference room until 9:30. Yeah.
So people can do that. You know, we'll hope to see you there. That'd be great. Next week. Thank you, Ben. Excellent interaction is what we really like to see. Let's get people up and talking and engaging in it, and got some people with great expertise in consulting and HIPAA that brought a lot to the table. We appreciate it. And next week, I did put into the connection there. Alan Zeibert will be our speaker talking about emotional intelligence and being relevant. This is you know, an interesting topic at these times, and this is stuff he works on. I put up his LinkedIn profile there. Check it out. I hope that we get to see you all again next week. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, Alana, and when he starts to talk about emotional relevance, it's going to connect with a fair amount of you in the that are here today. And it's really pretty interesting when you look at it at the level that he does. So, just thanks again, everyone, and stick around, talk. And as Johnny said, send us questions. You know, you can always email, message us. And the other thing is too, future topics. If you see future topics, I saw one earlier about getting out of the commercial lease from, I think it was Brad. I mean, that's something that we can, you know, we can address those kind of things down the road here too, as we do this. So thanks a lot. We're going to get off the stage here and let this thing continue. We'll see you next week.